101.1 FM Community Radio for East Central Illinois. And in support of Community Radio, the Art Theater Co-op has a weekly, actually several times a day announcement here on WEFT, and we support the Art Co-op and the work that they do here in the community. Today and until Thursday, Manchester by the Sea plays daily at the Art Theater. Casey Affleck stars as a handyman called back to his hometown to be the guardian of his teenage nephew after a death in the family. The sure-to-be Oscar contender is a film about love, loss, grief, and hope. Also playing is Moonlight, the story of Chiron told across three different chapters of his life. It's a coming-of-age drama that deals with issues of identity, family, and sexuality framed by contemporary African-American life. For more information, current dates, and times, visit the Art Theater Co-op online at www.arttheater.coop/full-schedule. Disability Beat is sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
My name is Jackie Walk from Special Olympics Illinois Area 8. You're listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for the East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a review of important news stories and disability issues to watch for in 2017. But first, disability news for the week of January 2nd, 2017. Tucked inside a larger bill signed by President Barack Obama last month is a tweak to federal law that's designed to make it easier for people with disabilities to save money. Under the new law, individuals with disabilities can create a special needs trust for themselves rather than relying on others to do so. Previously, such trusts needed to be established by a parent, grandparent, legal guardian, or a court. The change outlined in a bill known as the Special Needs Trust Fairness Act was approved unanimously by the U.S. Senate in 2015 and passed the House of Representatives this past September. But due to some differences in the House version, the measure returned to the Senate and was ultimately bundled within the 21st Century Cures Act, which Obama signed in mid-December. The option for people with disabilities to create their own special needs trust takes effect immediately. Said Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, who sponsored the Special Needs Trust Fairness Act, quote, "This provision replaces an antiquated law that was unfair and outmoded in its treatment of people with disabilities. Those who want and need to set up a trust to help pay for their care should be able to do so, plain and simple. This measure allows individuals to act in their own interests with their own assets without having to rely on a family member or the courts," end quote. The U.S. Department of Transportation is planning to move forward with new regulations mandating greater accessibility for people with disabilities when they fly. After 7 months of negotiations, an advisory committee tasked with addressing accessibility issues for the Transportation Department said it has reached a consensus on how best to move forward with rules designed to improve access to in-flight lavatories and onboard entertainment. Currently, accessible lavatories are only required on planes with more than one aisle. That can present challenges for individuals who use wheelchairs, since most domestic flights involve single-aisle aircraft. The agreement provides a roadmap for change through incremental improvements and an eventual requirement that single-aisle planes include accessible lavatories. In addition, the Access Advisory Committee, comprised of representatives from the airline industry, people with disabilities, and other stakeholders, is calling for captioning and audio descriptions to be available for most in-flight entertainment and greater safety and maneuverability standards for onboard wheelchairs. The committee was not able to reach a consensus on issues related to service animals, the Transportation Department said. Said Secretary of Transportation Anthony Fox, quote, "The agreements reached by the Access Advisory Committee is an important step towards ensuring that air travelers with disabilities have equal access to air transportation. It is unfair to expect individuals with limited mobility to refrain from using the restroom while they fly on a single-aisle aircraft, particularly since single-aisle aircraft are increasingly used for longer flights. It is also unfair for passengers who are deaf or blind not to be able to enjoy the same entertainment that is available to other passengers," end quote. The Transportation Department said it will proceed with developing new regulations, with a proposal expected in July of 2017. Logan Slippo loves to run. He can't talk and he has autism, but since the time he could walk, Logan, who is now 25, has loved being out in the world. That has led his parents, Sharon and Larry Slippo, to outfit their Virginia Beach home with all manner of security devices to keep him from running straight into traffic, keypads with special codes to secure the door, a 6-foot fence outside, and outside security cameras. Still, Logan yearns to be out, so they take him out for car rides. His parents have used those twin loves, running and riding, to create his own community service project called Logan's Run. Every Sunday, Logan collects cans of food from people's front stoops, throws them into the family's trunk, and leaves a note thanking them for their donation to local food pantries. Sharon, his mom, said, quote, "It reinforces the concept of do not let autism get in the way of doing your bit. That's the message. Find a way." From the time Logan was diagnosed shortly before the age of 2, Sharon has tried dozens of approaches to allay the symptoms of a brain development disorder that impairs communication and social skills: therapy, diet, injections, whatever held hope at the time. But Logan falls on the severe end of the autism spectrum, and sooner or later she had to accept that he would never have a regular job, or speak a full sentence, or be out in the world on his own, except when he escaped. She acknowledges, though, that her family is one of the lucky ones. Logan has a Medicaid waiver, a government funding tool that pays for support care. Thousands of people with disabilities are on the waiting list for one in Virginia alone, a state that the U.S. Department of Justice says is woefully behind in providing community services. Not long ago, Logan's case manager asked, "Does Logan do any community service work?" It seemed like a strange question to ask of someone who needs help getting dressed. Another parent might have scoffed at the idea, but it got Sharon thinking. Why not put those Sunday drives to use? She logged on to Facebook and the Nextdoor social media site to describe her idea. Quote, Then all you have to do is put your goods by the door, and Logan will swing by Sunday mornings to pick them up. Everyone needs a purpose. Thanks for helping Logan do his," end quote. People responded, and on a recent Sunday, Sharon cleared suitcases out of the car trunk. Logan had already packed them with clothing, swimsuits, toothpaste, and deodorant. He loves to travel and is always prepared for the off chance that today may include an airplane and a hotel. Sharon corralled Logan, who was alternately swiping at his iPad and running through the house. He tapped the screen to show her a photo of a hotel, showing he wanted to go on a trip. Larry took the wheel, and Sharon and Logan got in back with Logan still poking at the photo of the hotel. At the first stop, Logan and Sharon got out, and Logan picked up the sacks of groceries. He thrust them into the trunk, the same way he throws a bowling ball, by the way, from the chest out, Sharon observed. Before long, he had collected 150 pounds of groceries for food pantries throughout the neighborhood. It's not the first time the Slippos have tried putting to use the things Logan loves. They recall the time they taught him to take out the trash. He had begun scooping up magazines and newspapers they hadn't yet read. Larry said, quote, "It was a race to get to them before he did," end quote. Sharon believes in her heart of hearts that Logan enjoys this community service project, and so for now, this Sunday morning, and for the rest of the year, this drive-through neighborhoods to collect cans of groceries is the answer to the unending what now question. Sharon hopes he'll learn to understand the concept, which has already resulted in more than 600 pounds of food donations. But for now, Sharon is thankful for the idea of connecting a community service with Logan's favorite pastime, being out in the world. And that's the news for this week.
Still think about you every time I ride in my car. Well, I went to the place where everybody hangs out to see what everybody was talking about. And over in the corner all alone with you was a boy from last summer singing songs to you. He can't sing like I can sing, oh, it's so hard. And I still think about you every time I ride in my car. Oh, when I'm home alone, I can think of other things to do. But when I'm rolling in forward motion, I think of my only you. It's been a year and a day since I talked to you. I don't know how I made it, but I sure have been blue. And every time I think about what might have been, I jump in my car and start riding again.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and today I have no guest. I am going to be telling you about the things that are important to me, which you don't hear very much, at least not directly. So if you are not interested in hearing those views, then maybe tune in somewhere else because that's what you're going to get. There are a couple of really important things going on in the world of disability issues recently, and I think they deserve some attention, and so we're going to go in that direction. And a couple of weeks ago, Tony Pawlowski, the executive director of the Arc of Illinois, who is one of the most informed and informed advocates I know in the field, was on the program to talk about what had happened over 2016 and his perspective on the important issues to come. And so my task today is to look at two big issues that are connected in many ways, but maybe you haven't been aware or even have drawn the lines to connect the two issues. So let me talk about the national issue first. And this has become more of a concern since the election in November because we now have a majority in both the House and Senate, and those folks who are at the national level are looking at ways to revise and cut Medicaid services. Of course, if you are in the field of disability services, you know that Medicaid is one of the is the major source of funding for a whole wide variety of services for people with disabilities. It provides assistance with living in the community. It provides respite services so families can get a break and have a sitter come to stay with their family member so that they can get out and enjoy an evening together. It provides help with daily living and all of the other services that are available from the state developmental disabilities agencies. Nationwide, state and federal Medicaid together provides 78% of the funding for these services. It also provides health care such as hospital care, physician services, lab and x-ray services, drugs, dental, physical therapy, speech therapy, prosthetic devices, and other items for people who are eligible. What's being proposed now at just the conversation level in Congress is changing that service to become a Medicaid block grant. That would mean that Medicaid, rather than being provided through the federal Department of Human Services, would be a fixed amount of money from the federal government to the states to spend on health care for people who are poor, elderly, or have disabilities. It would have only general rules, and there would be very little oversight about the way it's spent. That would be left to the states, including Illinois. Expectations by advocates are that a Medicaid block grant would radically cut the federal share of Medicaid, could cap the amount the federal government spends on Medicaid, and would not increase the amount to keep up with healthcare inflation. So all of those concerns are very valid, especially considering the shape that Illinois is in financially right now, where they could take a part of that Medicaid block grant and use it for other purposes. Block grants could obviously force some bad choices and cause substantial conflict as groups with diverse needs compete for those scarce dollars. Since the services to people with disabilities and the elderly are significantly more costly than healthcare coverage for children, states could potentially decide to serve fewer people with disabilities and older people and focus their scarce healthcare dollars on children. However, there is no way to know what states would do at this point. We know that they would either need to spend much more money or people with disabilities will face real life consequences such as losing their home and community-based services. It would be a real crisis, certainly already in Illinois. There are long waiting lists for people who want to have or need services to live their lives, and those could really become placed in jeopardy. Another possible outcome is that the loss of other critical services, such as personal care, prescription drugs, and rehab services, could be at risk as well. One of the things that a lot of people, myself included, is concerned about is people being forced into unnecessary institutionalization. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next area that we're going to be discussing. So let me finish this list and then we'll go into the second issue. People losing their health care coverage, already at risk because of the proposed rescinding of Obamacare, is that people with disabilities will possibly not have the option of having coverage because there has been that recent decision to allow pre-existing conditions, which was not true prior to that. So for families who have kids with disabilities who have them covered under their insurance, they may not be able to get insurance in some situations. So that's a concern as well. with changes in the rates that are being paid, it could potentially shift the cost to individuals or family members to make up for those federal cuts. And you could as well lose access to doctors or service providers, especially if those rates are cut over the long term. It is possible that people could ultimately lose their entitlement to Medicaid, and that is, as I said, the only way that the majority of funds are provided for the support of individuals with disabilities and elderly people. So the advocates are saying to Congress to not provide block grants or cap Medicaid, which is the other issue. The block grants, though, gives a lot of control to the state government, and, you know, who trusts Illinois? Certainly not me. They are asking that slashing funding for home and community-based services that help people live and work in the community is not a good idea, and to also not put the health and safety of people with developmental disabilities at risk by block granting and radically reducing funding for Medicaid. So if you are at all interested in what the federal government is doing in this area, the ARC of Illinois and the ARC of the U.S., which put out this particular document that I just summarized for you, encourages people to contact their senators and representatives and let them know how strongly they feel about preserving the Medicaid system for people with disabilities and the elderly. So that is the first issue that I wanted to bring up to talk about today. And then the second one has to do with a recent series of articles published by the Chicago Tribune. The first of three was published on November 21st. So just a couple of months ago, a little over a month ago, and the most recent one published just a few days ago. And these articles are incredibly detailed and very, very critical of the disability services system in Illinois in all regards. So I want to give you a little bit of a summary of these, and I'm ignoring, for the most part, all of the horror stories. If you are interested in finding the entire set of articles, you can go to the Chicago Tribune website, chicagotribune.com. The series is called Suffering in Secret, and it's basically about Illinois, the state of Illinois, hiding the abuse and neglect of adults with disabilities who are supposedly being served by the system. Now, I want to preface this by saying that I believe so strongly that people with disabilities should have the same opportunities as everybody else in the community. If you've listened to this program more than a couple of times, you've probably gotten that idea that maybe I came from that perspective, and I do. I am not in favor of institutional care. I am not in favor of group homes, sheltered workshops, day programs, all of those programs that isolate and separate individuals with disabilities. Rather, what I believe is that people with disabilities need to have a life based in the community that's based on their hopes and dreams, based on their choices, and then as a team of people who care about those individuals, we need to figure out ways to make that happen. So, you know, sometimes those programs are the easy way out, but what they do is to keep promoting that isolation and segregation that we now have in our system. So let me just read a few little bits of what the Tribune found in this article that came out on November 21st. It says, in the first comprehensive accounting of mistreatment inside Illinois taxpayer-funded group homes and their day programs, the Tribune uncovered a system where caregivers often failed to provide basic care while regulators cloaked harm and death with secrecy and silence. The Tribune identified 1,311 cases of documented harm since July 2011, hundreds more cases than publicly reported by the Illinois Department of Human Services. Confronted with those findings, Human Services officials retracted 5 years of erroneous reports and said the department had launched reforms to ensure accurate reporting. Have yet to see that. To circumvent state secrecy, the Tribune filed more than 100 public record requests with government agencies, but state files were so heavily redacted and unreliable that the newspaper had to build its own databases by mining state investigative files, court records, law enforcement cases, industry reports, federal audits, grant awards, and Medicaid data. The Tribune found at least 42 deaths linked to abuse or neglect in group homes or their day programs over the last 7 years. And there are lots and lots of details and examples of things that happened to people over that period of time. And as I said, I'm not going to go into the gory details of the individual cases, but you can read those at the Tribune articles at ChicagoTribune.com. In hundreds of cases, the department allowed employees of group homes to investigate allegations of neglect and mental abuse in their own workplaces, the Tribune discovered. That alliance between group homes and Human Services investigative arm, the Office of the Inspector General, is not specifically disclosed in state investigative reports. In contrast, just to give you a little perspective on how other agencies handle this, Illinois nursing homes must maintain copies of investigative reports and surveys for public inspection. Additionally, state health officials publish a quarterly report detailing violations accompanied by nursing home names and addresses. There are no similar disclosure requirements for group homes. In this culture of secrecy, even seemingly benign records get shielded from sight. For example, the Tribune requested a state-funded PowerPoint presentation that included a list of needed improvements to community care programs, including group homes. The state responded, but the entire slideshow was blacked out except for the word recommendations. Citing the Tribune investigation, Human Service Secretary James Dimas has ordered a widespread reform to improve public accountability and streamline investigations. Dimas said he will push for legislative changes if necessary to allow public disclosure of group homes' enforcement histories. So this is really, it goes very, very deep into the system. State officials have touted group homes as a preferred option over institutional care, citing cost savings that can be used to fund more community care. The annual cost of care for an institutional resident, we've talked about this on many occasions, is more than $200,000 per person per year, compared with what is on average, they state in this article, $84,000 at a group home, but the sources that I have, including the ARC of Illinois, says that the average is roughly $55,000 per person at a group home, so extremely underfunded. Illinois has not increased reimbursement rates for people in group homes in nearly 9 years for the staff in the group homes, which is going to lead to even more issues. So this is an issue that we really, really need to look at, respond to, and keep our eye on. Oftentimes these articles get published and they get forgotten. We can't let this get forgotten because it's our families, it's our friends, it's people in our community who need the support from the state of Illinois and from the federal government. And if Medicaid gets cut and we get a block grant, we're all in trouble. So that's my word, and the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speaker and not necessarily those of WEFT, its board of directors, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Thanks for joining me today. Tune in next week, as always, for Disability Beat. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week.
Welcome to CU Progressive News, bringing you the many voices of your community. This show is produced in the studio of WEFT 90.1 FM at 113 North Market Street in beautiful, vibrant downtown Champaign, Illinois. The views and opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Prairie Air Incorporated, UCIMC, UPT,